Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the top line of Daf Kuf, the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, but before we learn the Gemara, let us turn to the outside margin. We provide a nosei, topic heading, and we will read it. It says, Lomo Amrinon, why is it that we say, Dechatichas Isur, Eino Betelo Barov Chatichos Heter? There was a point made in the Mishnah that if a piece of usur, meat, or fish falls into a pot of allowed pieces, mutter, heter pieces, if you recognize the forbidden piece, then the Mishnah says take it out, and the rest could be in fact mutter. However, if you don't recognize it, then the entire pot will be usur. The issue here is, why do we say that the entire pot is usur? The Gemara will raise different approaches to this issue. One is the issue of kol or es shedarkoi limnos, things that have significance insofar as they are viewed individually, pieces or items that are counted individually. Those are subject to non-bittul. In other words, because of their significance and their individuality, when they fall into a mixture with others, they do not become void. There are two approaches to this matter. It is a machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, that appears in a few other Gemaras. One approach says, kol shedarko limnos, anything that even at times is viewed with individual significance will not be batel. Pieces of meat are like that. At times, a cut of meat, a piece of meat, a hunk of meat, a certain section of meat could be viewed as individually important. And because of that, if it falls into a mixture of other pieces, it won't lose its significance and it won't become void, it won't become botel. There's another approach that says, when is it true, or when is it so that something won't become botel? That is true only when it comes to things that are es shedarko limnos, which is an expression meaning something that exclusively is counted individually, meaning that on all occasions, it will be viewed as individually important. This is not the case when it comes to pieces of meat. At times, pieces of meat may be, let us say, sold by the bagful, where no attention is paid to the individual piece. You might have a carton full of pieces of meat, cuts of meat, where the individual piece is not something of significance. You wouldn't say the same thing as, let us say, a diamond ring. People don't sell diamond rings, let us say, by the bag full. So a diamond ring would be an example of something that's exclusively significant individually. If you take that approach, namely, the approach that says es shedarko limnos is that which is not botel, and meat does not fall under that heading, the question will arise once again, why is it that the Mishnah makes reference to pieces of meat, forbidden meat that falls into a mixture of acceptable, of kosher meat, the whole mixture becomes unfit. Why is that? We will see another approach, another explanation, that even though we say that meat is under the category of kol shedaka limnos and not es shedaka limnos, nevertheless there is another reason why it won't be botel. And the Gemara will tell us that we're talking in our Mishnah about a chaticha ruya l'skaved. We're talking about a portion of meat, a cut of meat, a section of meat, a piece that you would serve someone of significance. That is, as opposed to, let us say, half a hamburger. That's not a chaticha ruya l'skaved, but a fine steak might be a chaticha ruya l'skaved. You would serve this nice piece of steak, nice section of steak, we'll just call it an individual steak, to somebody. So a piece of meat like that, that would say unkosher, that falls into a mixture of other kosher steaks, if you say that this is a chaticha ruya l'skaved, a portion that you would honor someone with, because of its significance, it won't become botel, won't be void. Now, let us turn to the Gemara. The Gemara at the top line quotes from the Mishnah, V'chein chaticha shenavela, and in the Hemshech of the Mishnah, on Daptzari Vavamid Beis, reference was made to a situation where if you don't recognize the forbidden piece so that you could pull it out of the mixture, then all of the pieces are usur. The Gemara asks on the second line from the top, V'tavtil merubah, in the case that you don't recognize the forbidden piece, why not apply the rule of bittul barov, that if you have a majority of allowed, then everything is allowed, then it's botel, then the forbidden piece becomes void. So the question is, why is there no bittul? Why does it not become void? So the Gemara continues, Honicha leman de'omar kol shedarko limnos shoninu. We can understand that there is no voiding, there's no bittul, according to the approach that says kol shedarko limnos, namely that things that are at times sold or dealt with individually, chatichos bosar, pieces of meat, also are sometimes given or distributed on an individual basis. They're dealt with individually. Elo leman d'omar es shedarko limnos shoninu, but according to the approach that says significance is defined as an item that is always given or sold individually, my iko lemeimar, then why is it that there is no bittul here, being that chatichos bosar are not they don't fall under the category of es shedarko limnos, because as we said earlier, pieces of meat are sometimes given, transferred, sold by the bagful or cartonful, where no attention is paid to the individual number of pieces. So why is it then that chatichos, because they are not categorized as es shedarko limnos, why is it that the meat is not botel? The Gemara answers, shiny chaticha, the case of a piece of meat that our Mishnah is teaching is different than other items. Since it is something that one would honor guests with by serving them this piece of meat, this grants it significance to the extent that if it's in a mixture, it won't become void. It doesn't lose its identity when it's in a mixture. Utsricha. The Gemara points out that I need to have both examples of something that's not botel that were featured in the Mishnah. The Mishnah featured the case of the gid, the forbidden nerve, the gid hanasha, that gets mixed up with other gidin, and in the case that I don't recognize the gid hanasha, all of the gidim, all of these nerves, will be forbidden, even though the overwhelming majority may be permissible. And I also need the case of the chaticha that we just finished describing, that it too, if I don't recognize the forbidden one in a mixture, all of the pieces become forbidden. Now, the Gemara continues explaining why, if I would have taught only one of these two examples, I wouldn't have figured out the other. We use a squiggle underline to highlight the expression de'i ashminan, whereby we can see each side why one would not have been sufficient to teach me about the other. So, once again, we read Utsricha, I need the cases of Gid and Chaticha. The Yashmin and Gid, had the Mishnah taught only the case of the Gid, that there is no Bittel, Mishum Deberiyahi, it's considered a complete entity. And complete entities do not lend themselves to becoming Botel, to becoming void in a mixture. Aval chaticha emolo, but a chaticha, which is a piece of meat, it's not a complete entity. I wouldn't apply the same standard, and I would have said on my own that it would be subject to bittul. The ashmin and chaticha, and had we taught the case of the piece of meat that is not botel, it has significance insofar as it is something that I would honor guests with that piece of meat. Avo gid emolo, but gid is not something that you would honor guests with, and therefore I would have on my own thought that it would be subject to bittul in a mixture. Tzricha, therefore it's necessary to teach that case as well. Dorash rabo bar barchana. Chaticha shel nevela v'shel dag tomei. If you have a piece of forbidden meat or fish that falls into a pot of kosher meat or fish, eino oiseres ad shetitein tam beroitev uvekipa ubachatichos. It does not create prohibition. It doesn't forbid the mixture until the taste of the original forbidden piece is perceptible in the entire pot. Namely, in the gravy, the kippah are fragmented pieces of meat that settle to the bottom of the pot, and in the rest of the pieces as well. Let us glance at Rashi. Eino oseres b'pleitasa. Once again, we are speaking about a case where I recognize the forbidden piece. That means I will take it out of the pot. The only problem that remains is that taste that exuded from it. So the pleita, the exuded taste, does not create prohibition. Unless there was enough, the original forbidden piece was large enough that the exusion, the taste that emanates from it, would be perceptible in the rest of the pot. Uki Rav Amoiro Ole Vidorash. Rav is about to disagree with Rabo Barbachano. The expression Uki Rav Amoiro, Amoiro is someone who would say over in a public fashion the lecture, the shiur that the Rav was giving. So in this case, Rav set up an Amora who would announce publicly a point which is in disagreement. In other words, he argues with Rabba Barbachana. So the Gemara continues as follows, but before we learn the Gemara, we have a title heading to this Gemara, and we're calling it Dino Shel Rav, Chaticha Naaseis Nevela. In a very general sense, what that means is that when you have a forbidden piece of meat that falls into a pot, let us say there are no other pieces other than one other kosher piece. We say that the forbidden piece that falls in will make the other piece considered like original Isser. The Chaticha, the other piece, Nasis Nevela, becomes like Nevela. Nevela being the example of something forbidden. Likewise, if a piece of forbidden meat fell into a pot, and there were many other pieces, but there was a one particular piece that was closest to this forbidden piece, so that piece which is closest to it, that's nearby, or we can say all pieces that are immediately nearby the forbidden piece, they would become nevela. They would become like a forbidden piece. Now, the practical application of that is that even though you might have had enough mutter substance in the pot to counter the original forbidden piece, there may not be enough substance in the pot to counter the pieces that now have become nevela. Let us now read the Gemara, and along with the Gemara, we'll make reference to Rashi. So, Uki Rav Amora Ole V'Dorash. Kivon Shenosan Tam B'Chaticha. Once the original piece imparts its taste to another piece, Chaticha Atzmo Nasis Nevela. The second piece itself becomes Nevela. And this is true, namely, even if I take out the original forbidden piece, that isn't going to solve the new problem. And as a result of the adjoining piece that was really mutter originally, but it becomes nevela, it will the oiseres call hachatichos kulon mipnei shehein mina. So that all the other pieces in the pot will become prohibited because it's a min bimino mixture. It's a mixture of like substances. And all the other kosher pieces will be affected by this piece, even though it's not the original prohibited piece, but it's the piece that absorbed taste from the original Isser. And therefore, even if I removed the original Isser, the original prohibited piece, this, we'll call this neighboring piece, becomes itself prohibited, and it is now found in a mixture with other kosher pieces. This is a min bimino mixture, and as we've learned on previous occasions, when you have mixtures of like substances, according to the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, there is no bittul. So, whereas, according to Rabba Bar Bachana, in the case of the unkosher piece falling into a pot, all we had to deal with according to him, was if you are removing the original prohibited piece because you happen to recognize it, then there's just an issue of whatever taste it may have exuded, projected into the pot, and if there's enough food in the pot to counter that taste, in other words, that it won't be perceptible, then you can eat the mixture, you can eat the pot, you can eat the food in the pot. According to Rav, even though I may be removing the prohibited piece, it still does not serve as a chance, or through its removal, I don't have even a chance of allowing the rest of the food to be eaten, because we have really created a min bimino mixture, and the whole pot becomes forbidden. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Kevon shenosan tam b'chaticha achas, shehoise betzida tamid. Rashi explains, Rav's halacha, that since the original piece that fell in had imparted the prohibited taste into another piece that was next to it, was constantly next to it. Oy shenizbash lo tchila ima kodim shitein shar hachatichos b'kedera, or the forbidden piece was cooked with just one other kosher piece before other pieces were put into the pot. V'lo haya bezu shishem be'iser. and the allowed peace that was there originally together with the forbidden peace was not 60 times its quantity, and the original forbidden peace imparted a taste into this other singular kosher peace. The acher kach nosan shar hachatichos bakeder, and then you poured in many other kosher pieces into the pot. Rashi goes on, chatichos zu shekiblotam anavela, the kosher piece that originally absorbed the taste from the forbidden piece, nasis nevela atzmo, it becomes like an original prohibited piece. It itself becomes a piece of iser. In other words, it's not an issue anymore of just mere taste that you have to deal with, like Rabba Bar Chana suggested, but rather we have a piece of prohibited meat now in the pot, even though I may have removed the original nevela. Rashi goes on, the oiseres kol achatichos kulam mitnei shehein mina. And now this piece that originally was in fact kosher, but it absorbed prohibited taste from some original nevela, it answers all the other pieces because they are all of like material. The kosalka daitoch mitnei shehein mina lo bakli. The thought right now, the assumption right now, is that we've created a min bimino mixture of affiliation kidei bitul shtei, and even though there might be enough kosher material to mavateo both of them, it still would be prohibited. That is the salkadaitoch, the havamina right now. Now, as we turn back to the Gemara, we have a question that lasts a few lines. We've indicated this with a long question marking. The kuf that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line indicates that this question takes up four lines of Gemara. Omale Rav Safra Le'abaye Michti. Let's look into this teaching. Rav Keman Omer L'Shmaitzei. Rav, according to whom did he say his teaching? The teaching that the neighboring kosher piece becomes itself like nevela and thereby asers all the other pieces based on it being a min bimino mixture. Well, that approach is Rabbi Yehuda. That's like the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, domar min bimino lo botil. Well, once you come to this point and you say that Rav is echoing Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, my irya kinosan tam. Why does Rav speak about the original nevela imparting taste to the neighboring piece? Afilu kilo nosan tam nami. Even if there would be no imparting of taste, there would be no bittul. Let's glance at the Rashi. Afilu lo nosno tam b'chaticho shebetzida. Even if the original nevela did not impart taste to the neighboring piece, lo botlo nami, there still would be no bittul. D'ha nevela gufa minayuhi v'lo botlo. Now here, Rashi is inserting information that we did not convey earlier, but at this point, we are not approaching Rav as referring to a case where he took out the original piece. So that if Rav is trying to, let's say, describe a mixture and call it a min bimino mixture, then Rav didn't have to introduce the issue of original forbidden piece imparting taste to a neighboring piece. Even if that was not the case, but the original piece remained in the pot, that too would constitute a min bimino mixture, because the original piece of nevela was meat. The rest of the pot are pieces of meat. Meat and meat is called min bimino. So once again, if Rav is trying to convey a teaching based on Rabbi Yehuda, he didn't have to introduce this whole issue of nevela imparting taste to neighboring piece. So the Gemara answers, and you can see we have triangles. These triangles represent two answers, and we've explained on the side under our Mivneh heading, Shnei Tshuvos LaSheila, two answers to the question, Shtedim Shitas Rav Mevusas Al Rabbi Yehuda, that if Rav in fact is based on Rabbi Yehuda, Vare Hu Sover Demin Bemino Eino Batel, and Rabbi Yehuda holds that like substances that get mixed up, allowed with forbidden, there is no avoiding, no bittel. Im kein loma lefi Rav, then according to Rav, why ha iser kashur the nesinas tam b'chaticha shnia? Why did the iser develop as a result of the original piece imparting taste to another piece? Even without that, the original nevela represents a threat to this entire mixture in that it is a min b'mino mixture. So, turning back to the Gemara, Omar Lei, Abaye answers, Hochav Mayaskinon b'shekidam v'silko. We are, in fact, talking about the case that we had described earlier, where the original piece is no longer there, because he removed it. He removed the original piece before he had put the other pieces of heter in. And therefore, as we described, and let's glance at Rashi for this, four lines from the bottom, b'shekita v'silka la'isur, v'silik roitev, he removed the forbidden piece and the gravy, k'idem shi'iteinu achiros b'kedera, before he put in all the other pieces, hilkoch, nosno tam borishono, hare zu choseres v'isrosan. If there was a singular piece of kosher food that absorbed taste from that original nevela before other pieces were on the scene, so then the kosher one that absorbed the taste turns around and will aser will forbid the other pieces that appear subsequently in the pot. The ilav b'may mitzri, and if there wasn't any imparting of taste, then why should the rest of the pieces be forbidden? Vashminan, and he tells us the chatichas menasis nevela sochabaseh befleitosa, that the original kosher piece that was there alone with the nevela, we are told it by simply absorbing the taste of the original nevela, it the kosher piece becomes like nevela and therefore asers the rest. So we just learned, according to Abaye, why it was significant to talk about an imparting of taste. And that's because the original nevela really is no longer part of the mixture. But if there was an imparting of taste from it to another kosher piece, that other kosher piece, as a result of absorbing the taste, becomes like nevela as well. Rava Omar. At the top of Omid Beis, Rava continues with his answer, Afilu Tema Lo Kidam Vesilko. Even without this explanation offered by Abaye, namely, even with the original piece still there, this mixture is Have Min Umino V'Dovar Acher. It's called a mixture of like things, namely the nevela with the shchuta, the nevela meat, the unkosher meat with the kosher meat, and the dover acher, that's a reference to all the other things, the spices and the gravy that are there. V'chol min umino v'dover acher, when you have a mixture like this, saleik es mino kemi she'eno, we, in our mind's eye, view all of the other kosher pieces as if they are not there. V'she'eno mino rova olov umevatlo. In order to appreciate all of this, we will learn Rashi. Starting from Rashi at the top, afilu temo b'shelo kidam v'silko. Even without teaching, like Abaye said that he removed the forbidden piece, V'lo mitzri shar chatichos elo mishum chatichas heter komaisa. Nevertheless, the other pieces will become usher only because of the original kosher piece, the original kosher piece that was with the forbidden piece. The chomin umino, Rashi goes on, kagon avelu shchuta v'davar acher, kagon tavlin v'roitav, the tavlin or spices wrote of the gravy. Mino deheter eino mevatlo leiser v'lo mosifo. In a standard situation where you have a forbidden piece with many other kosher pieces and you have gravy and spices, the mutter pieces are simply discounted in our mind's eye. They don't void, they don't mevatel the usher piece, nor do they add to it. Elo salkeu kamisha eino begderazu. Rather, in our mind's eye, we would view all of the other kosher pieces of meat that are there as if they're not there. V'nisharu hanavela v'roitev. And all you would have then, in your mind's eye, is the original piece of forbidden meat, and the gravy, and the spices. So it's nevela versus gravy. U'betela nevela v'roitev v'kipa. And that original nevela would have been botel in the gravy and kippah, the gravy and kippah, shredded meat, and probably spices included. Hilkach, therefore, nosno taburi shona tchila ba'ot shelo rava haroitev aleha, if you have a situation, and this is what Rav was teaching, according to Rava, if you have a situation where there was an original contact between a prohibited piece and a kosher piece at a point when there was not a preponderance of gravy, at a point when there was no other gravy there. V'acharkach nosan mayim v'kibo v'chatichos, and then you added to this tandem, the nevela with kosher piece, you added now gravy, and you added water and other spices and other pieces. Nisvasfo chaticho rishono al hanevela. That original kosher piece that was alone with the nevela, really, it joins up with the nevela. The oiseres hakol mitnei shehein mina. They will now aser everything. V'lo motzu chatichos levatla, and the other piece of heter meat won't be able to cancel or void or mevatel these two pieces. Even though there is more than 60 times the amount, however, the gravy alone is not enough to cancel the two pieces that were there originally. So, to go over this last point that Rashi mentioned, the issue of giving taste that Rav spoke about was very important, because as a result of the neighboring piece becoming like nevela, you really have now two pieces of nevela. And the fact that you may have added a lot of other kosher pieces, even more than 60 times in quantity of kosher pieces of meat, they are simply irrelevant based on the principle of salek es mino kemisha eino. So they don't figure in the strength of cancellation here. They don't figure in the koyach of bittul. All you really have now is the issue of the gravy. The gravy, though, is not sufficient in quantity in this scenario to mevatel both original pieces. Had you had just a piece of nevela, the original nevela, with kosher pieces of meat and gravy, so then the gravy would have been enough to cancel the original piece of nevela. But being that original piece of nevela imparted taste to a neighboring sole piece of kosher meat, you now have two pieces of nevela, so to speak, and the gravy that's there is not enough to cancel both of those pieces. And therefore, this mixture, even though there may be a vast amount of kosher pieces as well, but they just don't figure into the equation at all. And therefore, the whole mixture is forbidden. And that, once again, is a result of taste being imparted. And that's answer to the question of why was it important for Rav to mention anything about taste. We now start a Mishnah, and before learning the Mishnah, we glance at the side of our Gemara, and we see a Nosei Klali, a general topic, and we're calling it Isser Chal al Isser, the ability of a subsequent prohibition to be attached to something that is already usur, already forbidden. We will see illustrations of that as we go on in the Gemara. The immediate topic at hand we call the Nosei. Machloikis Tanoim, we'll see a Tanaic controversy. Isur gid hanoshe noheg bevehemo tamea. Take a horse, for example. The horse is called a behemo tamea, an unkosher variety animal. Does the gid hanoshe of a horse, this nerve that's in the hind leg of the horse, pose a problem in addition to the fact that it's coming from a forbidden animal? In other words, the horse is already forbidden as a behemot tamea. Do we say that if one were to eat the gid hanoshe of a horse, he would be in violation of not only eating horse meat, but in violation of eating gid hanoshe? That would be an example, if we say that there is a violation, a double violation, that would be an example of Isser Chal al Isser, namely the Isser Gid setting upon or attaching itself to the prohibition of Behemot Tameh, of eating horse meat. The Mishnah, Noheg B'Tohara Ve'eino Noheg B'Tameh. The first opinion, the Tanakhama, says that Gid HaNoshe applies only to kosher variety animals, and is not noheg, is not doesn't apply to unkosher type animals. And therefore, if a person, let us say, ate the gid hanoshe of a horse or of a camel or of any other unkosher variety animal, if you hold that gidim impart taste, so you would be in violation of eating horse meat alone. If you are of the opinion that gidim do not impart taste, that it's like a piece of wood, in other words, it's tasteless, then eating the gid hanoshe of a horse would not involve any violation whatsoever. It would be no different than if someone were to eat, let's say, the hair of a horse, which, even though it comes from a horse, it's not prohibited. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, our Mishnah goes on with a second opinion. He says, Af b'tameah, the prohibition of gid hanoshe is applicable to unkosher variety animals as well. According to this, then if one were to eat the gid hanoshe of a horse, he would be in violation not only of eating horse meat, but he would be in violation of eating gid hanoshe, of course assuming that the gid imparts taste. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, when you look in the Torah, you see in Sefer Bereishis, which is pre-Matan Torah, it's pre-giving of the Torah. Yet in Sefer Bereishis, after the incident involving the struggle between the Soro Shalesov, the angel of Esav, and Yaakov, where the angel of Esav injured Yaakov's leg by called squeezing his leg or causing that nerve to move out of place, the Torah says that there is a prohibition of eating gid hanoshe. Now, when that prohibition was stated, the laws of kosher versus unkosher variety animals were unknown. The Torah had not yet been given. So you have a situation of gid hanoshe being prohibited, and no distinction made between kosher versus unkosher variety animals. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda concludes that gid hanoshe applies to both kinds alike, kosher and unkosher as well. Omru lo, the Rabbonon responded to Rabbi Yehuda, B'sinai nemar, the prohibition of Gid HaNosheh was revealed only at the time of the giving of the Torah. It wasn't something that was binding on the family of Yankov Avinu. Elo shenichtav b'makomo. Just that when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, he wrote the prohibition of Gid HaNosheh and attached it to the occasion that was responsible for it eventually becoming prohibited. Namely, he wrote the prohibition of Gid HaNosheh alongside the story that eventually led up to its becoming prohibited. As we turn to the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading that introduces this piece. You'll notice in the Gemara itself we have we've drawn in triangles. They will appear in differing directions, point up, point down, as you skim ahead on the page. On a couple of occasions, we will be noting triangles with a 1 and 2 to the space immediate to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We will attempt to explain this by looking at our Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin. You see triangles featured, and we're calling this a ma'akav. A ma'akav is an attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style of the Gemara. Point up represents questions. The point down represents tshuvos, answers. The sukkah will be a birur shitas Rabbi Yehuda, an investigation and clarification of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, the Mechayev Mishum Gid Gam Bevehemot Tameya, who says that there is a Gid violation even when you're dealing with an unkosher variety animal. Ha She'ela. The big question will be, Ech Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev Shnayim Bizman Shesover Shein Yisur Chalal Yisur. How is it that Rabbi Yehuda says that there are two violations when one eats the Gid HaNosheh of a Behemot Tameya, when this same Rabbi Yehuda holds that second prohibitions do not attach themselves to things that are already prohibited? We will see as we go on in the Gemara. We mentioned triangles with numbers in them to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We've introduced them here. They represent Shnei Shlavim, two stages, Laseis Tshuva L'She'ela Hanal. Two approaches, two stages in attempting to answer the question of how is it that Rabbi Yehuda can hold that Gid HaNosheh applies to a Behemot Tameya when at the same time he holds Ein Isser Chalal Isser. So one approach, the first attempt will be that it's true a second Isser doesn't attach itself to something that was previously Osir, was already Osir, but in this case, Bahadodi Kasi. More, we'll talk about the two Isurim settling or appearing simultaneously together. And therefore, it's not a function of attaching a second Isur onto a pre-existing original Isur, but rather the two Isurim, the two prohibitions setting in at the same time. And in such a case, two Isurim can apply to one item. The Gemara, though, will challenge that and say, in reality, the Gid develops later. In other words, only after the Isser of Tameya comes into existence, only later does the Gid physically develop. And therefore, you can't say that they come about simultaneously. Therefore, the Gemara will give a second answer that, how is it that Rabbi Yehuda can hold, on the one hand, Ein Isser Chalal Isser, and yet the Isser Gid is Chal on Behemot Tameya? The second answer, what we've written here, is Isser Gid Havi Isser Chomor. The prohibition of Gid HaNosheh is a severe prohibition. It's a strict or stringent prohibition. And as a result of that, it can attach itself to something that was only of a lighter prohibition in nature. And what is this significance or this strictness or this chumrah that appears by the Gid HaNosheh? Shekein noheg bivnei noyach. It's a prohibition that's binding upon Gentiles as well. Let us now turn to the Gemara. The Gemara opens up with a long question. This is denoted by the long question mark, and you'll notice a kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line indicating that all of the lines of this section of Gemara are here to develop the question. And after that long question, you'll notice then an inverted triangle around the word lo'olam, and we've also called this number one to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, with a little triangle surrounding the number one, the inverted triangle, being the first attempt at answering the question. The Gemara. V'sovar Rabbi Yehuda Isser Chalal Isser. Does Rabbi Yehuda hold that a second Isser can be superimposed on something that already was Asser? V'ha Tanya. We have the following Tanaic source, and you can see the next few lines of Gemara in a frame indicating its Tanaic nature. In this source, we will see that Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. Now, it's not going to be so obvious just by reading the words of the source, but when we get to the end of this source, we'll then offer an explanation from which we will see Ein Isser Chal Al Isser according to Rabbi Yehuda. So we have this source, and we've underlined Rabbi Yehuda because he really is the focus of our attention. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yochol Tehe Nevelas Oif Tome Metame Begodim Beves Hablia. A word about this topic. Birds convey Tumah only upon eating them if they are Nevelas, if they die. In other words, as opposed to, let us say, a dead animal that imparts tumas nevela upon contact, birds impart tumas nevela only upon eating them. And as far as we know, the iser of nevelas of applies only to nevelas of Torah, dead kosher variety bird. So this source is opening up with the question of, is it so or could it be that the Tumas Nevela can be achieved by eating the carcass of a dead unkosher variety bird? Imagine a dead eagle. If one were to eat that, would he then become Tomei? And that kind of Tumah, that kind of ritual impurity, results in a person's clothing, the clothing that he's wearing, becoming Tomei at the point that he swallows the bird meat. So that's the question. Would the consumption of dead eagle meat result in tumas nevela of tumas oif, which is characterized by a person's clothing also becoming tomei? So to this the Gemara answers, Talmud lomar nevela utrefa lo yochal letoma va. From this we learn, mi sheisuro mishum bal tochal nevela. What kind of bird imparts tuma? That kind of bird which is forbidden only because of it being nevela, being non-shechted, non-slaughtered. Yotzozeh, to the exclusion of the eagle, the dead eagle, she'eni suro mishum bal tochal nevela. Though it may be a dead eagle, the prohibition isn't because it's nevela, ela mishum bal tochal tamea. Its prohibition is that it was an unkosher variety bird. So Rashi highlights over here, this is can be found at a point in the Rashi where you will notice a star, and you'll find this in the lower part of the narrow lines of Rashi. I'm reading Rashi now. Ein isuro mishum nevela. From the fact that the dead eagle was described as something that is not prohibited because of nevela, because of it being dead, almost svirule lo asyusir nevela v'chala isir tamea. This shows us that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the isir nevela doesn't even come into the picture. It doesn't come and become superimposed on the pre-existing isir of of tamei, of it being an unkosher variety animal, bird. V'chi tema, you might want to say, Kosovar ein begidin b'no Saint Tam. You might want to explain Shita's review in the Mishnah as follows, that he holds Gidim don't have taste. Ubetame onami, and even in a horse, Isser Gid Iko, Isser Tumo Leko. In fact, there isn't two Isurim here when you're dealing with the Gid of a horse, and therefore we don't have an issue of Isser Chalal Isser. And what did Rabbi Yehuda mean when he said that the Gid is binding by Tamea? Once again, not that there's an additional Isser, but rather there is a sole Isser, a singular Isser of Gid Hanoshe. Being that the Gid does not communicate taste, the Isser of Tamea doesn't apply. As we mentioned offhanded or like by the way earlier, that one from a Torah perspective is not prohibited in eating horse hairs. Hair is tasteless. And as a result of that, the prohibition of eating unkosher meat doesn't apply. Because when the Torah forbids unkosher, it's forbidding something that has taste. The Torah, however, bans the eating of Gid Hanoshe. That Isser is a separate Isser, regardless of whether it imparts, whether it has taste or not. And being that we're suggesting right now that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the school of thought that says that the Gid is considered tasteless, therefore, there is no violation of Behemoth Tamea. However, there is a violation of eating Gid. Maybe that's the explanation of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah. Just to go over this point again, even though we may be sounding a bit repetitive, we are trying to say that Rabbi Yehuda, in fact, holds Ein Isser Chalal Isser. What did Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah mean when he said that the Gid is binding even by Tamea? He meant to say that if you eat the Gid Hanoshe of a Behema Tamea, you're in violation of eating Gid Hanoshe alone. Well, this approach too doesn't work. The Gemara challenges it. V'savar Rabbi Yehuda ain begidim v'no Saint Tam. Could you possibly say that Rabbi Yehuda holds that Gidim don't have taste? V'ha Tanya. We have a source in which Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is very clear. Ho'echel Gid Hanoshe shel Behema Tamea. One who eats the Gid Hanoshe of an unkosher type animal, Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev Shtayim, Rabbi Shimon Poter. We'll get back to Shitas Rabbi Shimon later on, but for the meantime, we're focusing on Rabbi Yehuda. We've underlined his name and dashed underlined Shtayim. Rabbi Yehuda then is clearly saying that there are two prohibitions in eating the Gid Hanoshe of a Behema Tamea. And in order to arrive at two prohibitions, you're going to have to tell us that the Gid Hanoshe has taste. Therefore, you're in violation of eating Behema Tamea and in violation of Gid Hanoshe. Now, how can you say that, though, if Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion Ein Isser Chalal Isser, how can you be chayev two offenses for eating the Gid Hanoshe of a horse? The Gemara answers, Le'olam kosavar yesh begidim b'no Saint Tam. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Gid does produce taste, does have taste to it. The kosavar noheg b'shlil. And he also holds that the Gid is already a problem in the shlil stage of animal development, namely, even before it's born. So that as soon as it comes into existence as a fetus, the Isser Gid is binding as well. If that be the case, as the Gemara goes on to say, the Isser Gid, the Isser Tuma, the Hadi Hadodi Ka'osi. These two prohibitions set in simultaneously. So, that being the case, it's not a problem is chal al iser of a second iser being superimposed on a pre-existing iser, but rather the two isurim, the two prohibitions, the two isurim come into being simultaneously. The Gemara, though, challenges this answer. Umi motzis amris noheg b'shlil. Can you really say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Gid Hanoshe is binding on the embryo? The Vatnan. We have a Tanaic source that says noheg b'shlil. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ain't noheg b'shlil v'chal b'mutar. We have to focus only on Shitas Rabbi Yehuda in this Tanaic source, and says, as we've dashed underlined, ain't noheg b'shlil. The Gemara answers, Hani Mili, this statement of Rabbi Yehuda that it's not binding when it comes to the embryo, Gabi Tahora, that is true with regard to a kosher variety animal. If you have a cow, and the cow is pregnant, and you happen to slaughter the cow, you can eat the embryo based on the mother's slaughtering, and you don't have to remove the Gid Hanoshe, the nerve in the hind leg of this embryo. So that which we say that it's not Noheg B'Shlil is true only with regard to a kosher variety animal, the Rachmona Omar, Ko Babahemo Tochelu. The Torah says, everything contained within the animal, you can eat. And contained within the animal is its embryo. And that includes all parts of the embryo. Avo, b'tameo noheg. However, with regard to a behema tameo, the prohibition of gid does apply to the embryo as well. So, up till this point, we're saying that even though Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Isser Chal Al Isser, nevertheless, the Isser of Gid and the Isser of Behema Tamea come into being simultaneously with the formation of the embryo. However, the Gemara challenges this as well. You can see we have a long question marking accompanying this section. In this section, we will challenge the contention that the Gid comes into existence together with the formation of the embryo. And essentially, what we will present in this question is that in the formation of creatures, the basic creature, the basic embryo, forms prior to the appearance in embryonic formation of these nerves of the gidin, so that it really becomes first behema tamea, and being that the gid is not there at that time, gid coming in only later on, we come back to the problem of ein iser chal al iser. So once again, we're going to have to try to understand what does Rabbi Yehuda mean that there is an Isser Gid by a behemoth Tamea. The Gemara. Omi motzis amris de travayu badi adodi kosu. Of course, you can see the triangle at the end of the line, introducing with the point up, introducing this question, as we have been doing all along the way. Can you really say umi motzis amris de travayu badi adodi kosu that both prohibitions, the gid and behemot tameo, set in simultaneously? Vatnan. But we have the following Tanaic source. This source deals with a nozir. A nozir is someone who took upon himself nozir status, thereby becoming osir in wine, grape-related products, and tumas mace. And if he finds himself encountering Tumas Meis, so the Nozir has to take a complete haircut and start his whole Nozir period all over again. Al Elu Tumos HaNozir Megaleach. So the source tells us regarding which kinds of Tuma the Nozir will in effect be interrupting and canceling the Nozir observance that he had practiced up till this point, thereby requiring him to take a full haircut, a full body haircut, and then restart his nozir counting. So, what are those tumas? One is al hames, and secondly, the al kizayas min hames. For encountering a complete dead body, and for encountering an olive quantity of of flesh from a dead person. The Kashyalon, and we ask, in looking at this source, why is it necessary to teach these two examples? Al Kizayas min ames megalech, once you tell me that for such a small quantity of flesh, an olive quantity of human dead human flesh, he has to restart his Nazirite period. Al hames kulo lo kol shekein, for an entire corpse, all the more so. Why is it necessary to teach the case of mes kulo? The Omer of Yochanan lo nitzucha elo lenefel, the case of a complete mace, in fact, is a situation of a miscarriage. This is a human being in its very early stages of development, where you'll have a situation that you have, in effect, a complete person as far as Tuma is concerned, even though there isn't a kezias of bosar, there isn't an olive quantity of flesh. So, as Rabbi Yochanan says, once again, lo nitzuchel nefel shaloi niskashru evorov begidin. It's a person in a very early stage of development where there is a body form, but its limbs have not become attached with Gidin. So what we see here is that the Gidin they appear later in the development of the creature. Being that that's the case, first the limbs are formed, which then in the case of the formation of a behemah tameah means the iser behemah tameah sets in first before the gidin. Alma, we see from this iser tuma kodim, the prohibition of behemah tameah sets in before the iser of gid hanoshe. Well, at this point then we're posing a challenge to the answer one that was given above. You'll notice we have used a diagonal dashed underlining under the expression above, Bahadi Adodikasi. We see that we can't say that anymore. Therefore, we have to offer a new answer, and we're calling this number two. Why is it that Rabbi Yehuda holds that when you're dealing with a behemah tameah, there is an iser of gid hanoshe as well? After all, Rabbi Yehuda holds ein iser chal al iser. So the Gemara answers, afal gav de iser tuma kodem, even though the prohibition of behemoth tameah sets in first, osi iser gid chayol olei, the prohibition of gid hanoshe is able to be superimposed and attached to the pre-existing iser behemoth tameah. Why? And again, we've used a diagonal dash underlining to highlight this new answer, Shekein Isuro Noheg Bivnei Noyach. The prohibition of Gid HaNoshe is of such significance that it applies to Gentiles as well. Daikonami, by careful reading of the Mishnah, particularly focusing on Rabbi Yehuda, we see that this is what was on his mind. Dikotoni. It says, Omer Yehuda, Valo Mibnei Yankiv Nesar Gid Hanoshe. This we can see a quote from our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Gid Hanoshe, as far as he is concerned, is also already from the time of Bnei Yankiv. This is before Matan Torah. Valo Mibnei Yankiv Nesar Gid Hanoshe V'adayin Behemo Tameo Muter Eslohem. And that was at a time that they could have eaten even horse meat. They could have eaten horse meat, but not the Gid Hanoshe of the horse. This shows us that there was a prohibition in Rabbi Yehuda's mind of Gid Hanoshe that applied to those that were before Matan Torah. And who was around before Matan Torah? That was a period of Bnei Noach. Rashi at the bottom, Teikonami, The time of Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum Hai Taimahu, this is the reason for Rabbi Yehuda, namely the fact, you know, is the reason allowing for Isser Chal al Isser, the Isser Gid, being superimposed on the Isser of Behemot Tameah, Midiyolof Mibnei Yaakov, from the fact that he learns from the Bnei Yaakov, the Koidim Matan Torah, Bnei Noach Havu. Before the giving of the Torah, they were classified as Bnei Noach. At this point, we have completed the discussion surrounding Rebbe Yehuda, and we want to now refer to Shitas Rebbe Shimon that we had mentioned before. So here the Gemara quotes the original Tanaic source in which Rebbe Shimon appeared as well. Gufa ha'ochel gid anoshes shel behemot tameah. If one eats the gid hanosha of an unkosher variety animal, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev shtayim, Rabbi Shimon at the top of daf kuf aleph amud aleph, Rabbi Shimon poter, Rabbi Shimon says there is total exemption. The Gemara now asks a question in an attempt to figure out Shitas Rabbi Shimon. We have a long question marking. This is illustrated by the Kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed vertical line. The Gemara asks, Rabbi Shimon, Monafshach, Rabbi Shimon, well, whichever way you look at things, we don't see why there should be an exemption, a total exemption. We have a double underlining that appears under the words E, in which the Gemara reviews all of the, goes through stages of analysis in trying to figure out the position of Rabbi Shimon. Well, as the Gemara says, whichever way you look at it, we don't see why there should be exemption. E, Isser, Chalal, Isser. If Isurim can be imposed on pre-existing Isurim, well, L'chayev Nami Mishum Gid. There should be guilt for Gid in addition to Behemot Tameah. E'ein Isser Chalal Isser. If you say prohibitions cannot be superimposed on pre-existing ones, L'chayev Mishum Tuma Dekodim. So, at least be chayev for be in violation of eating Behemot Tameah. Meat from Behemot Tameah. The Gid is part of it's part of the body of a Behemot Tameah. So there should be that violation. The Ein Begidim Beno Saint Tam. And if you claim that, well, Gidim don't have taste, and as we said earlier in our Shiur, that something that is tasteless is not prohibited under the heading of Behemot Tameah, but L'chayev Mishum Gid. Since the Torah states an Isser concerning Gid, a specific Isser, a specific prohibition concerning the Gid, we see that the Torah is prohibiting the consumption of Gid regardless of taste. So there should be at least a violation of Gid Hanoshe. Omar Rava, Le'olam Kosover Ein B'Gidim Beno Saint Tam. Rava explains, Shitas Rabbi Shimon is that Gidim do not impose, don't impart taste. And that being the case, we understand why there's no violation of Behemot Tameah. The question then is, why is there no violation of Gid? V'shayni hosam, the case of Behemot Tameah is different. The Omar Kra, the Pasuk, when featuring the prohibition of Gid, it says, Al kein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael es Gid hanoshe. And from this, Rabbi Shimon infers, Mi shegidoi osur ubesoro muter. When does Gid Hanoshe apply? It applies to something that only the Gid is prohibited and the meat is allowed. That would be kosher variety animals. Yosazu, to the exclusion of the case of Behemot Tameah, shegido osur ubesoro osur. In the case of Behemot Tameah, the meat is osur as well. So, as a result of that, being that the meat is osur, Rabbi Shimon feels that the Torah, when it was banning Gid, was not addressing the case of such an animal. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.